Grüezi miteinander, ganz herzlich willkommen und einen wunderschönen guten Tag, meine sehr verehrten Damen und Herren, liebe Freunde aus nah und fern. Ich begrüße Sie zu dieser Sondersendung von Weltwoche Daily, die andere Sicht, unabhängig, kritisch, gut gelaunt, aufgezeichnet in Hanoi am Anfang des Monats September 2024. Ich befinde mich auf einer Freundschaftsreise mit Parlamentariern und Politikern aus der ganzen Welt, aus Europa, aus Südamerika, aus Asien und den Vereinigten Staaten von Amerika. Und das Ziel ist es, hier China etwas besser kennenzulernen. Ich bin ja ein China-Neuling, jetzt sitzt mir gegenüber ein Habitué, ein Routinier, sozusagen der chinesisch-maltesischen Beziehungen. Ich freue mich sehr und werde es gleich wechseln aufs Englische, to welcome our distinguished guest in the program. It's former Foreign Minister of Malta, der frühere Außenminister und auch Ausbildungs-Education Minister. And what have you, another position too?
Employment as well.
And employment und auch noch der Beschäftigungsminister von Malta. Es ist Herr Evarist Bartolo, Mr. Evarist Bartolo. Welcome for this discussion. Great that you're here in this program. To start, probably say something about Malta. I mean, our viewers don't know so much, unfortunately, about your culture.
It's a very small country. It's the smallest state in the European Union, but there's a lot to say about it. It has a long history. It has been settled for at least 8,000 years. Very strong temple culture, very unique. Mm-hmm. The kind of temples that were being built 5,000, 6,000 years ago. What is very interesting about them? That it was a culture of peace. Our archaeological investigations and even DNA tests on people shows that it was a society without weapons. No weapons. It was only with the Bronze Age, when we were invaded for the first time, that people brought weapons from outside. Mm-hmm. Our history has been a history of invasions. Mm-hmm. We have been invaded at least 22 times, always not because of something that we did, but because there was rivalry on who was to control the central Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. The last invasion was 1800, after Napoleon came and took mm-hmm. us from the Order of the Knights. Then the British came and they said they will come and help us and leave. They stayed there 164 years. We were a colony. But since then, we have become independent in 1964, a republic, so no monarchy anymore, and also neutral and non-aligned. That was the first declaration that we made.
Neutral?
No military bases.
Sure. I mean, like Switzerland. Was Switzerland a role model for Malta as far as neutrality is concerned?
Yes, yes. In fact, in 1953, our leader at the time, Don Mintoff, wrote a very important essay in the New Statesman mm-hmm. called We Want Malta to Be the Switzerland of the Mediterranean.
Ah, okay, yeah, that's very interesting.
And he was looking at neutrality. Mm-hmm. Neutrality and being open to business to all parts of the world. Since then, it has become very difficult what it means to be neutral in today's world.
But so one can say that actually the quintessence, the essence of Maltesian history, all these invasions, is at the end of the day become neutral. Is this somehow the consequence of your history?
Yes.
Becoming neutral because you have been invaded, you have made so many bad experiences with foreign powers?
Exactly. Turning upside down our historical experience. Because if you came to us and invaded us, it means, yes, that you have captured us, but it means that you have turned us into enemies against others. Mm-hmm. So whenever the Arabs took us, we were the enemies of Europe. Mm-hmm. When people from Europe took us, we were the enemies of Europe. So we said, the best thing for me is to be neutral, to be friends with everybody. And that is our idea. Very difficult to practice in today's turbulent and divided world.
We will come to this. This will be the final point of our discussion. We're sitting here in front of a gallery of famous people, of guests of this hotel here in the middle of Shanghai. We're in the old town of Shanghai at the moment. We see Ronald Reagan, we see Tito,
We see Georges Pompidou from France. We see Margaret Thatcher, Chancellor Helmut Kohl. We even see in younger age the Russian President Vladimir Putin. If you would situate you in this pantheon of politicians, who is the politician who would you would sympathize most with? Are you a Ronald Reagan-esque
politician? I would point out that there is Nixon. That is very important. In his visit in 1972, which opened up to China, our prime minister at the time, Don Mintoff, came after him. So he must have passed through this hotel as well, a few months after Nixon. And we opened up relations with China, so 52 years ago. And I think what I find very interesting, and I don't say this in any romantic, idealistic, fantasy world, that it is possible to be one of the smallest states in the world and the largest state in the world and have equal relationship of mutual respect. Even from my own experience as a foreign minister, I can tell you how different countries deal differently with different states. China really respects, and the issue of small states, for them it's not important. They respect, and I think there are five principles of peaceful coexistence, that you don't interfere in the internal affairs of others, that size does not matter, that there should be sovereignty and democracy even in international relations. I've seen it in practice, it's not just idealistic. So I think all the people that have passed through here have a lot to tell us, to show us, that even with different political ideologies, political opinions, they saw the value of opening up to China and establishing relationship with China. So much different from today.
You have been to China several times. It's not the first time for you here. You have made this visit first to Beijing, now to Shanghai. I joined this group in Shanghai. I've not been to Beijing now. What's the most striking observation that you have after all these visits? What's the most interesting thing about China right now, at the moment? What fascinates you, strikes or surprises you most at the moment about China?
I've come here for the first time 20 years ago. And the biggest difference that I see, which is visual, which is in a few days, because it's important not to be arrogant and think that, first of all, you can talk about China without ever visiting China. I mean, I hear people talk about China. And then you say, these must be people who have come to China.
Experts,
understood it, read its history, discovered its civilization. And then you find out, no, I haven't been to China. No. I will say that even though I have been coming to China for 20 years, I do still not understand China. It's a very complex reality. I have a lot of respect for its civilization, because I think it is a civilization. What has struck me most over the last 20 years is how they have tried to combine economic prosperity, social progress, and the environment. I was struck in Beijing. I remember I used to walk on the streets, and they used to tell me it was like smoking 70 cigarettes a day. And the last time I was there, I also got sick because of pollution. Now, the big drive that they have made for planting trees, for example, you see it in Beijing, you see it a lot in Shanghai. I think I am very impressed with that, how they have tried to combine together economy, environment, health, and I think the inclusion and participation of people to decide what they are doing.
The great mystery for me about China is, coming from a small country such as Malta, Switzerland is also very small. We have no imagination what it means to hold a country of this size together. And we see that China has made a huge, you could say, a quantum leap of economic progress the last 40 years. But on the other hand, economic development, wealth brings a lot of instability into a society, a lot, of course, of anarchic elements, you can say. But you have to preserve the balance, the stability of the whole system. What is the the formula of success of China, as far as you understand from it, also for political stability plus development?
Yes, from what I understand, and I am still trying to understand, this is that they do take public participation seriously. I don't think we understand that enough. It is a bottom-up approach to decisions that need to be taken. I remember talking to one of their politicians telling me that their biggest fear is what has happened to them in what they call the century of humiliation. Mm-hmm. When the West, with the opium wars...
19th century.
The 19th century. But interesting what they conclude from that. They say it was our fault. Interesting that they do not simply say we were victims of the West. We were victims because we were divided, mm-hmm. because we were weak. So the enemy outside will not win mm-hmm. if you do not have enemies inside. If you have enemies inside, then you are weak and lost.
If you look at the newspapers in Europe, in Switzerland even, they all seem to agree on one thing. China is this horrible dictatorship, this terrible autocracy. It's somehow an enemy of the West, and now we have to pull ourselves together and march with the legions of the United States of America for democracy and freedom. What do you make of this? I mean, what do you say about this, you could say, popular perception in the European media?
No, I think it is tragic, it is sad. It is a carryover from the approach that you always need an enemy, that there must be, that you are good and others are evil. But I think this is bad for the world, it's bad for the United States, it's bad for China, it's bad for Switzerland, it's bad for Malta, because we get, it's like what I was telling you about our history, but on a global scale, that we are invaded mm-hmm. and we have to support one bloc against the other. I have spoken also to people, even in the Heritage Foundation of the United States, which is a very conservative mm-hmm. foundation. There is a Joe Carafano saying, why does it have to be us and them? Why do countries have to choose the United States or China? We should be open to each other, you know. And even in the case of the United States, this is not good. This is not good, and we need to keep on being open to each other, because that's the only way the world will exist.
You started with your first remark that neutrality in a difficult world, in a troubling world. We are living in troubled times. I mean, we have a war in Ukraine. We have this sense of confrontation towards Russia. I see, especially in the West, that there is a weaponization, a militarization of the relationships against or with China. What kind of world are we living in? What were you saying as a former foreign minister? What's happening right now in this strange atmosphere?
Well, I think it's the arrogance of the powerful, and it started with the collapse of the Soviet Union. Some people in Washington got this hubris, this idea that we are the chosen ones. Mm-hmm. We are the dominant power. And now the rest of the world must follow what we say. What is happening in Ukraine, which is such a human tragedy with all those, sure. you know, all those people killed, all those people injured, the destruction of a country, started in 2008 when there was a decision to take NATO to the border of Russia. Mm-hmm. I still remember the Cuban Missile Crisis. I know I was a child of 10 years old, but I still remember being told that the world is going to finish because the Soviet Union and the United States were fighting over the Cuban missiles that were pointed at American cities. I understood that I cannot come as your neighbor and point a pistol at you. This is the same situation. Mm-hmm. And there was no reason to take this path. Mm-hmm. We could have taken a different path altogether. Mm-hmm. Warsaw Pact, dismantled? Well, dismantle the NATO. And then create a security architecture under the OSCE. So that, like that, my security...
And why did it not happen?
Because the Americans decide, those who were in charge of the foreign policy and of the defense policy and of the military-industrial complex, mm-hmm. because if you do not have an enemy, if you do not have wars...
Bad for business.
It's bad for business. You need a market. And what is the market? So that's the tragedy. And since then, you know...
Yeah, it's deteriorating. How do you see the role of the European Union? I always think that Europe is the continent of defeated former superpowers. We have a great experience in defeat. And Europe could be somehow a hub of mutual understanding, even with some sense of neutrality, but it goes in a different direction. How do you see the role of Europe, the role of the European Union in this crazy world at the moment?
It makes me very sad and very disappointed that the European Union, in its own interest and in the interest of the United States and in the interest of the whole world, simply follows obediently and blindly what is decided in Washington. Mm-hmm. It is very sad to see like that, because the European Union has a very good role to play, to balance. It has an interesting model, but even the model now is not working well. I really hope that in the new multipolar world that is being born, the European Union will have the humility, which it doesn't have, and will have the wisdom, which unfortunately at the moment it doesn't have, to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. Mm-hmm. We have serious issues in the European Union in terms of the demographic decline. We still think that we are central to the history of the world. We are becoming a smaller part of the world. But that shouldn't be a crisis for us. We should accept to be with others, but not to be over others, this idea of domination. Mm-hmm. And we should be part of the global majority. Mm-hmm. And also educate ourselves and educate the United States that there should be no supremacy. Mm-hmm. China shouldn't rule the world. The United States shouldn't rule the world. Mm-hmm. We are now supposed to have reached a level of civilization where the diversity of the different states with their own interests to run themselves. Otherwise, this is a new empire. This is a new colonialism.
If you were the advisor to Ursula von der Leyen, to the European Commission in Brussels, what would you suggest the European Union at the moment?
First of all, I would suggest to them to have a bit of humility, to start visiting different parts of the world, to realize that the world is much bigger than Brussels and than Washington, and to listen to what the different parts of the world is saying. I was in Amman when the Gaza tragedy broke out. I was telling even top people in the European Commission, be careful, you are losing your credibility. If you talk about democracy now, if you talk about peace now, if you talk about human rights, you will not be taken seriously, which means that that creates a serious model, a serious crisis for a model of democracy. Mm-hmm. How can you go around talking about democracy and about human rights when you not only allow these things to happen, but actually help in making them happen? So I would tell them, please, go around. Listen. Try to understand cultures. Try to understand civilizations mm-hmm. of other countries. We used to learn that basic diplomacy meant I put myself in your shoes. Mm-hmm. I try to look at the world through your eyes. Not to agree with you, but mm-hmm. to understand you. Mm-hmm. We have given up on that. Mm-hmm. It's as if it's trench mm-hmm. warfare of the First World War. Mm-hmm. You dig your trench, I dig my trench, and we just mm-hmm. shoot at each mm-hmm. other. Mm-hmm. That's not the way forward, especially if now we can throw nuclear weapons at each other.
We have three major conflicts. We have the war in Ukraine, we have the war in Gaza, and we have growing tension in the South China Sea, Taiwan, China, and United States. How close are we actually on the brink of a major war? I mean, are we sleepwalkers, as they wrote, the European politicians were before the First World War? I believe they were not sleepwalkers. I think they saw what they were about to do. But where are we standing today? Are we on the abyss, on the brink of an abyss? How dangerous is this?
We are. It is dangerous. It is dangerous. And so far, what has kept us, I think, is the prudence and wisdom of people who are demonized. Because even somebody like Putin is demonized. He cannot do anything right. Mm-hmm. Even Xi Jinping is demonized. Yeah. And it's as if the rational ones are the ones of the West. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think we need prudence and restraint, definitely from the West, mm-hmm. and not to play with fire. I think at the moment, the only thing that will save us is the wisdom of the leaders mm-hmm. to say, listen, let's be careful. For example, I was very interested to see the role of Russia and China regarding Iran. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that they played a moderating role mm-hmm. on Iran, not mm-hmm. to react to Israel.
It didn't get any credit for that?
No, completely no. Mm-hmm. In fact, then you are being accused of being weak mm-hmm. and of not. So it can only happen through wisdom. There was the great Jewish wise person, Hillel, who used to say, if we do not learn wisdom, we will become extinct. Mm-hmm. And we run the risk of doing that. Mm-hmm. And we're not exaggerating when we say something like that.
You were starting with the importance of neutrality. Switzerland is a neutral country. What's your take on Switzerland? How do you see Switzerland in this world, in this crazy world of today?
I am very worried at what is happening. I know that there are positions being taken together. Malta, Switzerland, Austria, and Ireland, of marching towards NATO, of getting involved in the militarization of the European Union. The European Union is becoming a military alliance. If you see the European Investment Bank making it possible for the military-industrial complex to get money to invest, if you see the decisions that are already being taken to take money from science and technology and put it in the defense industry, we're going to have a defense commissioner in the new commission. We are moving towards a war economy, mm-hmm. which means that you take resources from different sectors of the economy and put them in what we call defense, and put them in armaments. At the same time, NATO and the EU are marching together. And I know that these four countries, your country, my country, and Ireland and Austria, are also getting more involved in NATO. This is not good. We're becoming neutral in name only. And mm-hmm. it is a pity. It's not good for us, and it's not good for the blocs, because if the world is going to form into blocs against each other, that is not good. Mm-hmm. That is not good. Mm-hmm. And neutral countries have a role to play for themselves. I mean, the many opportunities that have happened in Switzerland and even in Malta of bringing countries together. Recently, we had Jake Sullivan and Wang Yi in Malta. That mm-hmm. only happened because mm-hmm. we're neutral. Mm-hmm. Gorbachev and Bush came to Malta because mm-hmm. we were neutral. Mm-hmm. So, and the many mm-hmm. meetings that you have in Switzerland, if the world is going to lose even these spaces mm-hmm. where countries can meet, it mm-hmm. becomes a much more dismal place.
I don't know why, but I am optimistic. I think that reason, wisdom will come back. I think that Europe will finally realize its interests. And I also believe neutrality will come back. We have in Switzerland, we will have an initiative, a popular vote on an initiative which is defining, in a very strict sense, neutrality. Am I being too optimistic, or do you share my optimism? Do you think that neutrality will prevail? Do you think that Europe, as a force of reason and moderation, could come back?
Number one, we cannot afford the luxury of despair. If we do not hope, if we are not optimistic, then these things will not happen. So let's be optimistic, let's be hopeful, but it will not happen on its own. We have to work for it. Mm-hmm. We have to make these things happen.
And what is for you, probably now on your travels to China, what is the most enlightening, what's the silver lining at the end of the horizon that you see now, be it here in China, be it general observation. Where's the silver lining? We shouldn't leave our viewers with a too gloomy view. What's the silver lining at the moment?
No, I think the silver lining is that there is so much knowledge in every field where we can improve people's lives in every area, if it's the environment, if it's health, if it's education, if it's the economy. But let's learn to live together. Mm-hmm. I believe that by learning to live together in a new way, it's not easy. We can do it. Mm-hmm. We can do it. The world has passed through terrible times, and we can overcome, but we must work at it. It will not happen on its own.
And when Richard Nixon, the former cold warrior and red eater, was able to shake hands with Mao Zedong, then I think even today's leaders should be able to shake hands with each other.
Yes, again. And when we had Reagan Bush and Gorbachev agreeing on uniting Germany, agreeing on, you know, working together on taking away the missiles and start dismantling missiles. So we have been to the brink and come back. Mm-hmm. Let's do it again.
Thank you very much, Mr. Foreign Minister. Thank you very much, Mr. Bartolo. Meine Damen und Herren, sehr interessant. Wir werden das natürlich noch mit Untertiteln versehen. Nur ganz kurz zusammengefasst, wir beide setzen hier sehr viel Hoffnung auf die Neutralität. Der Außenminister macht sich größte Sorgen natürlich über die Militarisierung der Europäischen Union. Und ich glaube, aus schweizerischer Sicht ein ganz wichtiger Punkt hier dieses Loblied auf die Neutralität und auch diese sorgenvolle Betrachtung, dass eben die Schweiz, Malta, Österreich, andere Länder in diese NATO hineinrutscht, beziehungsweise auch in die EU, die zunehmend im Begriff sei, ein militärisches Bündnis zu werden. Nun, es gibt ja auch andere EU-Politiker, über ihn haben wir gar nicht gesprochen, Viktor Orban, he's probably also one of those silver lining politicians, yes, who's trying his best to bring these different parties together.
And the Pope.
Das müssen wir auch herausstreichen. Auch der Papst in Rom, eine ganz wichtige Friedenspersönlichkeit. Und ich freue mich sehr. I'm very happy that we could have this conversation here. Meine Damen und Herren, ganz herzlichen Dank Ihnen für die Aufmerksamkeit. Und ich werde mich wieder zurückmelden mit Einschaltungen aus Shanghai. Vielen herzlichen Dank.